Welcome, Impactful Parents. It's time for the Impactful Parenting Podcast, where I give you parenting tips and resources to make you a more impactful parent to your school-aged child. I am your host, Christina Campos. Welcome, Impactful Parents. Today, we're going to talk about power struggles in our family. Hello, my name is Christina Campos. I am founder of The Impactful Parent, and I help parents of school-age children turn their chaos into connection with their adolescent. I offer free parent education videos every week, online courses, and coaching. And if that wasn't enough, I bring experts in on other fields onto the Impactful Parent stage to teach you even more. And today I have a special guest. His name is Philip Mott. And Philip is a homeschooling dad of three kids. He is a monthly contributor to the magazines The First Time Parent and fatheringtogether.org. And Philip also has his own supportive parenting groups. And I'm very happy to have him on here today to talk about power struggles. So thank you for being here, Philip. Let's get started right away. I want to ask you, why do you think that power struggles are so prevalent in family life?
Well, one of the main things that I see parents really believe, and maybe we would never say it this way, but we believe that we are the sole responsibility for bringing up and like training our kids. So we think that doesn't fall to them at all. So when we are trying to get them to do things, we kind of assume that they don't want to do it. And so we have to make them do it. And so we put ourselves kind of in opposition to their desires and try to force them through things.
Yes. From my experience, power struggles, it's the parent wanting to control a little too much and, to not the parent's fault. It usually comes from a place of love where they just don't like to see their child mess up. They don't want to see him hurt. They don't want to see him fail. And then couple that with years of being an authority figure and being able to have so much control over their children in what they do and how they can influence them. And then the tween and teen years start to emerge. And now your adolescent starts to gain their own independence and they want to like break free of kind of the reins of control. And then I see the power struggles like amplified, but not to say that your toddler doesn't do it too, because they certainly do it also for the same reasons. Trying to develop independence, trying to develop their own identity. It's interesting how it all works out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say that same point that it starts early on when they start to develop that they have ideas of their own, and toddlers are notorious for being very demanding. And if we don't approach that from a place of getting on the same side and kind of figuring out how can we go both get the same things, we start those power struggles early, which tends to be the focus of my writing, is the early childhood. But then I've worked with a lot of teens over the past too. So,
well, let's talk about that a little bit. How would you advise a parent who is in that situation where they're beginning to see power struggles, whether it is from their young person or maybe their young adult? So how can they avoid getting themselves into that struggle of power?
Yeah. Something about the way you said that, it actually reminded me of a story I heard about Disney parks. Their training came to mind. I had some other notes and I thought, no, this is actually more important, I think. But I had heard that when Disney Parks does their training, they train their employees to find a way to say yes. So whatever a person is asking, find a way to say yes. And that would be my advice to parents, especially of teenagers, is, well, I do that with my kids too. Like, Dad, let me use your computer. I'll let you use my computer when I'm done with this. And so I haven't said no, I've said yes, but I've reframed it in a lot of ways. And and taking a few moments to find a way, like, what, how can I say yes to this? You know, someone says, I want to go get ice cream, or I want to watch a movie. A teenager might say that. And it's not really the right time to do that. Maybe it's 10 o'clock on a school night. And you might say, ice cream sounds like a great treat to get tomorrow after school or Friday after school, instead of just shutting it down and possibly opening up that space for frustration. Not that I really have a problem with frustration, but if I can avoid it, I'd like to, you know, scheduling it out, as long as it's something that you can hold to, then I think that's a really great way to keep those power struggles at bay.
I love that suggestion. And I do the same with my own children. I talk to parents about it, but I love how you framed it because it's so simple. How can you say yes? And I feel like that's a mistake that a lot of parents make, is they're just so quick to say no. And that word, no. And automatically that puts whoever's on the reciprocal end of it in a defensive mode. And more so, right, if you got a teenager trying to assert independence. So I love the suggestion. And if you can just find a way to say yes instead, and it's all about how you're presenting your no. Mm-hmm. It's about how you're coming at it. And it can be tricky. And I know a lot of parents who are listening to this right now are like, yes, it's so simple. It's going to be a lot more difficult than you realize because you're out of practice. But to intentionally really try to say yes in a different way, eventually with practice, should become easier and avoid a lot of those power struggles that you're talking about.
Yeah. And I'll use another life example. So I work with, I take improv classes. And one of the lessons of improv is yes, and that whenever your partner on stage is offering something to you in a scene, that you, with your actions, say yes, and I'm going to add to this. And so once we get used to finding a way to say yes, then we can also add our ands as well. I want to go get ice cream. Yes, let's do that tomorrow. And I can run an errand to the store at the same time. So I start to add little ways that we're communicating back and forth on the same side instead of against each other. Instead of saying, we don't have time, I have to go to the store tomorrow, I'm saying, yes, we can do that. And I can do my thing too.
And I like that suggestion coupled with, if you don't have your own agenda, because sometimes we don't as parents, now a lot of times we do, but sometimes we don't, that you could say yes, and how else could I help you prepare for whatever that the activity is? Can I encourage you to get your homework done earlier so that you can go out with your friends this weekend, even though technically you're saying the no to right now, no, you can't go to your friends, it's 10 o'clock, it's too late. Yes, you can this weekend. How can I help you make that happen so that it stays?
Yeah, I really like that. Just help reminding that it's kind of like a way to remind them that they do have some responsibilities that they are, that they're holding themselves to, and but you're not nagging them. So I do like those different ways to like bring things back up. Remember, you have that homework that you were kind of putting off. What are some things that, how can I help you set aside time to do that so that it doesn't get in the way of other things that you want to do?
And it reinforces that you're there for them, to help them. I think kids, especially when you've been in those power struggles for a long time, kids forget that you're actually on their side because it doesn't feel like that to them. So I think that verbal reminder of yes, you can, and how can I help you get that so I don't have to say no later, is just, it's another way to communicate so much better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so now I want to ask you, let's talk about what really is at stake if we decide to continue this struggle with our kids, because, you know, just it happens. Sometimes we have a really difficult time not doing the power struggle. It's just too hard. So let's talk about some of those consequences.
Yeah, I think what we tend to think is like, I have to do this for their own good. And we think, well, maybe their pain is at stake. but that I can get through. But I think I know that from my life with my own family, from watching other families go through this, that it's not the pain that's at stake. It's the relationship that we have with our children. And when we start to disrupt the fabric of that relationship and the bond, it's not like I don't want to paint it like this doomy, gloomy picture that we'll never talk to them again. It's we start to lose influence in their life, and we start to lose influence in the areas that really matter in terms of who are their friends, who do they feel connected to. We don't have a lot of control of that, but we do have some influence. So when we're thinking about our kids and interacting with them, one of the things that is helpful to ask ourselves is this helping or hurting the relationship? Is what am I doing? Things like nagging or criticizing, if I have enough self-awareness to stop and ask myself, is what I am doing right now going to help this relationship, or is it going to hurt the relationship? I think parents are accustomed to asking or telling themselves, this is going to help my child in the future. So we have to work through the pain, which again, if we justify it too much, we can really start to put a lot of tension on the relationship. But if we take a step back and say, is this helping our relationship? I think that puts a different spin on it, and it can stop us in our tracks several times.
And I think parents underestimate the influence that they really do have in their child's life, even as an adolescent, because even though they're rolling their eyes, their ears are still open, and they may act like they're not listening, but they are. And the more that we can make those connections with our kids, the more that influence will stay strong, even if it doesn't seem like them. We kind of have to push through some of those tough years, because we don't want them to only turn to friendships as a point of guidance. That would be not so great usually as an outcome. Yeah. You want them to have somebody, some adult in their life, and you hope it's you too, as part of that, so that you can be that influence. And I'm curious to see what you think about how you grew up, because I come from a place of, I hear of a lot of power struggles with some of the parents I work with. And I find that it really actually rooted in how the parent grew up. Like, they were in a household where there was lots of power struggles. So that's a norm for them. It actually feels, I don't want to say feels comfortable, but it feels familiar. So when they are doing it in their own home with their own child, it's familiar. They don't like it, but it's something that they feel, well, this is just kind of how it is. What do you think about that theory?
I want to clarify and see if I understand you right. You're saying that the way that we were parented is what we tend to copy that.
We certainly do. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think it's much bigger than that too. And we don't want to be too hard on our own parents, that we need to recognize the role that other adults in our childhood play, especially in schools, the way that we perceived adults. We tend to take on that role and we become the authoritarian figure. Some people may feel like the authoritarian word is a little strong, but I think it's important to recognize that we do have authoritarian tendencies, that we tend to treat children as a culture more like property or pets that perform for us than community members. And so making that shift and trying to become less authoritarian, I think, is really important. Does that answer that question? I felt like I got off on a little side tangent.
Well, I think you made another good point, that it's about our perspective. How do you view your children? Are you an authoritarian? Are you in control of them per se? Or are they an equal? Or if they're not an equal, what are they? What are they if they're somewhere in between? And to recognize that's your viewpoint on how you're viewing your family members, I think that's all very important to understand, so that those power struggles could be more understood too, of why they're even happening. Now, tell me a little bit more about what you do and how people could reach out to you and hear more of you if they resonate.
I'm working on a book that is tentatively called Relatable, which is really all about this concept of how do we become relatable to our kids, and unpacking that those authoritarian tendencies a lot and the things that get in our way. If people want to reach out to me, PhilipMott1 on Twitter is probably the easiest place to get me. There's a community of other homeschooling moms and dads that I interact with there. And that's a really good place to connect. And that's where I share most of my content.
And if you would like to become a more impactful parent, check out all of what my website has to offer. I have parenting courses, family coaching, 30-day challenges, and lots of free resources. But until next time, you got this, parents. We're just here to help. Thank you for listening today. Remember to subscribe and share this podcast with a friend. And don't forget, the Impactful Parenting Podcast is an extension of the Impactful Parent community. So go to the Impactful Parent website and sign up for a 30-day challenge, browse the free resources, or register for the weekly newsletter so that you don't miss a parenting tip that can help you and your family. Thanks for listening today, and go to theimpactfulparent.com. See you next episode.